practice, so it took a couple of minutes, but the wards eventually clicked back. He stepped back, turned the doorknob, and gave the door a slight push.
"Whew!"
Willie retreated, holding her nose.
"Ah!"
Daisy fled, gagging.
"A dead rat,"
said Isabel, who had come out of the kitchen to see what was going on. At Daisy's heels, she rapidly returned to her stronghold.
"A Hamelin town of dead rats."
Vera followed them.
"Coming, Mr. Fletcher?"
He shook his head without a backward glance.
"Duty calls."
The kitchen door thumped shut. A handkerchief held to nose and mouth, Alex switched on the torch and cautiously set foot on a small landing. To his right, flimsily railed wooden stairs ran steeply down against the wall. The middle section of the railing was broken. He went down a few steps and directed the beam at the floor below the break. On the pale grey floor lay a corpse. Just one, not a horde of rats. It wore a tweed costume, a silk blouse, pearls, and one shoe. The cellar was airtight enough to keep out blowflies, apparently, but nothing could prevent the ravages of decomposition. Having seen what he needed to see, Alec hastily stepped back into the passage and slammed the door. 4. Daisy, feeling rather green, sat at the kitchen table with Willie and Vera. Isabel had gone back to stirring her gravy. The savory smell helped banish the sweet, sickly stink of death from Daisy's nostrils.
"Could a badger have burrowed in?" Daisy asked. "Or a fox, perhaps?"
"Don't think so," said Isabel. "I only had a glimpse when the agent and Mrs. Gray showed me round the house, but I'm pretty sure the walls are bricked, and the floor is stone."
"Besides," Vera pointed out, "if an animal could get in, it could get out by the same hole."
Willie, her face as green as Daisy's felt, shuddered.
"Thank goodness we invited your Alec, Daisy. He'll know what to do." "I suppose no one's going to feel like sitting down to roast beef," Isabel said regretfully. "Oh, well, it can be eaten cold, and the gravy will reheat. I can rescue the potatoes, too, and the carrots, but the Yorkshire pudding will be a dead loss. Tea, everyone."
She filled and plugged in an electric kettle.
"So, let's face it," said Vera. Her eyes filled with horror. "It's a person. But who on earth?"
Alec came in, opening the door as little as possible to squeeze through and closing it sharply behind him. In spite of these precautions, a nauseating whiff accompanied him. His clothes were probably permeated, Daisy thought in dismay.
"I've opened the side and front doors and all the downstairs windows to air the place out. I checked that all the doors upstairs are shut. I suggest you stay in here for the moment, altogether. Are you on the telephone?"
"No, we're waiting for them to connect it," Isabel told him. "There's a phone box just round the corner in Station Road, outside the post office. 3 minutes' walk."
"Where's the police station?"
"I think it's in the old town."
"Yes,"
Vera confirmed.
"Wickham End, practically next door to your hotel."
"I'll ring then, unless I meet your beat Bobby on the way. Not rats, as you'll have guessed."
"Would you like one of us to go and phone?" Willie asked reluctantly.
"No, thanks. I'd better. There's nothing to be done until the local force takes over. I haven't attempted to relock the cellar door. I assume none of you is likely to open it."
"No fear,"
they chorused.
Darling, are you going to tell them you're from Scotland Yard? Alec grimaced.
I'd rather not. They won't like it. But on the other hand, they're pretty well bound to find out, and then they'll be offended. Best policy is to reveal all up front.
He looked round the table.
And that goes for you ladies equally. They're going to be asking you a lot of questions. For pity's sake, don't hold anything back. I'm off.
Turn right at the gate, Isabel directed him. Then left on Station Road, and it's on your right.
Thanks.
Thank you. And thank goodness you're here. With a wave, he departed, once again letting in the horrible stench of death.
Damn and blast, said Daisy.
Only Vera appeared slightly shocked.
Why?
Asked Isabel, making tea. We're the ones who are going to be interrogated. At least, I imagine it must have been there since before you even came to Beaconsfield.
Probably. It's not a subject I've studied intensively, but considering the cool, dry conditions in the cellar, I should think it must have been there quite a while.
Ugh! Willie shivered.
But Alec found the body, so he's a witness. He can't possibly keep it from his superintendent. And Mr. Crane will blame me, as usual.
Blame you for what? Vera demanded. He has no reason to blame you for anything.
He doesn't need a reason. Whenever I'm within 100 miles of a case Alec's involved with, he's convinced I'm interfering.
That's not fair.
Fairer than you might suppose,
Willie put in, a trifle maliciously.
But never mind, Daisy said hurriedly, to forestall any questions from the other two on the fairness, or otherwise, of Superintendent Crane's strictures. It's not likely Alec will have anything to do with the case, apart from giving a statement about finding the body. The local police almost always want to run things themselves, and he can't just butt in without being invited. Their first question's going to be, who is it? They won't get very far without identification.
Any ideas?
Except you, Daisy. We haven't had any visitors since we moved in. Isabel had been stowing away the unwanted meal in the larder. Now she came to sit with the others, pouring herself a cup of tea.
Not even the vicar, though Vera goes to church.
He's a rector, not a vicar, Vera said. He did drop by once, one evening when you two had gone to the cinema. I didn't mention it, because I didn't think you'd be interested. And you were so busy telling me about the films. I gave him a cup of tea. He didn't go anywhere near the cellar door.
Anyway, he hasn't gone missing, said Willie. No one else has called, Isabel continued. I'm here most of the time.
Do you lock all the doors when you go out?
Well, no, not if I just pop round to the shops. But why would anyone come into the house uninvited?
To snoop, Vera suggested. Or burglars, of course.
In daylight, when I might return any moment.
You ought to get a watchdog, said Daisy.
Anyway, nothing's gone missing. And no bag of swag found lying about the house.
Not to mention, said Willie, that to get into the cellar, a burglar would have to have a key.
Not if he had a lockpick, Daisy pointed out, or a picklock, or whatever it's called. Alec easily managed with a coat hanger.
He'd have to have locked the door again behind him, barring his own escape route, then fallen down the stairs and broken his neck.
I remember the stairs being steep, said Isabel, but we don't know that that's what happened. Maybe he had a heart attack or something.
He'd still have had to lock the door behind himself.
It doesn't sound likely. Suppose he heard me coming home, Isabel mused. He might have thought he could hide there until the coast was clear. Oh dear, you don't suppose he died of asphyxiation, do you? The cellar's supposed to be nearly airtight. They were all silent for a moment. A slow death from asphyxiation was much more horrible than a quick one from a broken neck or a heart attack. Daisy broke the silence. Do you think a burglar would try a locked cellar before ransacking the house? It doesn't sound likely to me. If he'd collected the loot first...
We would have noticed stuff missing, said Willie. Not that any of us has anything of real value.
There's Vera's grandmother's pearls.
But I wear them practically every evening,
Vera pointed out.
They say pearls lose their luster if they're not worn. And Isabel's silver.
It's all present and correct. Besides polishing twice since we moved in, I've been checking it now and then to make sure none of it has wandered off with Mrs. Hedger. So far, so good. She has her faults, but dishonesty doesn't seem to be one of them.
And she hasn't got a key to the cellar?
Daisy checked. She said Mrs. Gray never gave her one. Her duties didn't include dusting or sweeping down there. Never set foot in it, she said, and she wouldn't have if asked, being T.T.
I never realized taking the pledge included refusing to dust bottles.
The others laughed half-heartedly. Daisy went on. It certainly sounds as if it must have happened before you moved in.
How long was the house empty? Do you know?
Isabel frowned. I'm not sure. Mrs. Hedger went on coming in to dust, so I couldn't tell by that. Just a few days, I think. As we bought it furnished, moving wasn't a major upheaval for either Mrs. Gray or us. Once Willie had everything sorted out with the solicitor, the house agent, Mr. Vaughan, told us we could move in any time after the first.
You dealt with the lawyer, Willie?
Most of the business. We all had to sign the papers, of course. But I learned a bit of law in my last job, some of it relating to conveyancing.
I hope he treated you professional to professional.
He wasn't too bad.
What about Vaughan? Was he properly respectful of your eminence?
I had very little to do with him, said Willie, tight-lipped. Daisy had a feeling she had wanted to say as little as possible. Isabel said, not my cup of tea, but he was all right. A bit too polite, if anything. Smarmy, especially towards Mrs. Gray.
Well, presumably she was paying him a commission, Daisy pointed out, and he hoped to sell you a house. I expect it's a job that calls for a bit of smarm.
Isabel and Vera laughed. Then Vera said guiltily,
We shouldn't be laughing. What if the police arrived and heard us?
I wish they'd hurry, said Willie. Meanwhile, as Alec hurried up Orchard Road and crossed Station Road to the telephone box, he was in two minds as to whether to ring the Beaconsfield police, probably a sergeant and a couple of bobbies, or County HQ. Also, since sooner or later he'd have to reveal his credentials, should he do so at once, on the telephone, or wait until he spoke in person to a detective? It wouldn't make much difference in the end. Some local coppers were happy to have help from Scotland Yard, official or unofficial. Some bitterly resented the implication that they couldn't cope on their own. Might as well tell them right away. He'd better not disgruntle the local bobby by going over his head, he decided. He asked the operator for the Beaconsfield police station.
Inspector Neil's on holiday, sir. Sergeant Harris is in charge. He'll be at home this time of day.
This is urgent. If he's on duty, or even if he's off, come to that, I don't care where he is.
Yes, sir.
A woman answered the phone. Alec asked for Sergeant Harris.
He's just sat down to his dinner, she said crossly.
I'm afraid it's urgent, madam.
The next sound that came to Alec's ear was a repressed belch. His own stomach rumbled sympathetically, and he thought with longing of roast beef and Yorkshire pudding.
Now then, Harris grumbled. What's so urgent a man can't be left to eat his dinner in peace?
A body, Sergeant.
The ensuing pause somehow conveyed disbelief rather than shock. After a few seconds, the voice came laden with suspicion.
And who might this be as I'm speaking to?
My name's Fletcher. Alec Fletcher. As it happens, I'm an officer with the Metropolitan Police.
No need to announce his rank, nor to mention Scotland Yard.
Let me make it clear. I'm not on duty. My wife and I are visiting friends. It's pure chance that it was I who discovered the deceased.
Pure chance, was it, sir? Just where exactly was you when pure chance led you to this dead man?
Woman.
Alec was beginning to feel as if he'd swapped roles with Daisy. She had more than once complained of skepticism on the part of authorities when she dutifully reported having happened upon a body.
Oh, a woman, eh? And I suppose you're going to tell me you've never seen her before in your life.
I think it extremely unlikely that I've ever seen her before, far less made her acquaintance. But in the circumstances, it's impossible to make a positive statement either way. Perhaps you'd better come and see for yourself.
I'll do that, sir. And you just stay put till I get there, if you please.
That wouldn't be much use to you, Sergeant. I'm in a telephone box on Station Road.
Heavy breathing.
And where, sir?
Said Harris.
If so be you don't mind me asking, did you leave the corpse?
Where I found it. In the wine cellar at Cherry Tree House. No, just plain Cherry Trees. Orchard Road.
Cherry Trees. New people. Three old maids, isn't it?
I don't think they'd appreciate that description. I'm going back to the house now. I'll see you there shortly.
Striding back up Orchard Road, he hoped the foul stink had cleared from the house. It would inevitably return when Sergeant Harris opened the cellar door, but with all the room doors in the house closed and side and front doors left open, the worst of its impact should be avoided. Alec was quite looking forward to the moment when the stench hit the nostrils of the obnoxious sergeant. Still, as Alec would have been quick to point out to Daisy, the man was just doing his job, and had been called out in the middle of his Sunday dinner. Not a bad excuse for grumpiness. A whiff of rotting flesh reached Alec when he was halfway up the garden path. Emanating from the open front door, it was unpleasant, but bearable. No doubt it was worse in the house still. He didn't want to ask the women to open the kitchen door. He stopped and studied the house. The kitchen was on the northwest corner. He walked over to the small, wide-open window framed by blue gingham curtains. The odour coming from it was mostly roast beef. His stomach rumbled again. Voices cut off as he tapped on the glass. He heard a clink of china, as if someone had set down a cup on a saucer with a shaky hand.
Hello?
Alec?
Daisy came to the window and peered out, holding back the curtain.
You gave us a shock. Aren't you coming in?
I'll wait in front for Sergeant Harris and bring him round to the side door. You ladies can stay put in the kitchen with the door closed, for the present.
Wouldn't it be better if we all left now, darling? Presumably the sergeant will open the cellar door again, and that foul smell will return to full strength.
He's going to want to talk to you.
Of course, which will mean opening the kitchen door to the stink, unless we decamp to the Saracen. He can talk to us there. Here would be gagging and choking.
It's a point. You'd better hurry. He should be here any minute. Take the car and go round by Station Road, and with a bit of luck, you'll miss him. He won't be happy, but I'll make your excuses.
Unless he has the most appalling case of catarrh, he'll be as happy to get out of here as we will. She turned away. Come along, girls. We're hopping it. 5.
Not the bar this time, said Willie, as Daisy parked the Austin 12 in the street outside the Saracen's Head.
No, Daisy agreed. She sniffed. For one thing, I think we still smell a bit... gamey's the word. I hope there's no one in the ladies' parlour.
They'd soon leave, Isabel said dryly, getting out of the back.
I wish we'd had time to wash and change, Vera moaned. I could go up to my room and change, but it doesn't seem fair as you can't. You could all wash, though.
Do let's, Willie chimed in as they entered the lobby. I'd really like a bath, but even just scrubbing my face and hands would help.
We'll have to be quick, though. Alec and the local police may turn up any moment with a million questions. Not Alec. Daisy led the way upstairs. If they want him on the case, they have to go through a big palaver with the Yard. And the locals won't be along for a while, I expect. The sergeant will have to report to his superiors right away. They'll probably send out an inspector from High Wycombe, or even Aylesbury. Opening the door of her room and ushering the others in, she added, Listen, I'll have to ring for hot water. Don't, for pity's sake, say anything about the body in the maid's hearing. Sally arrived slightly out of breath, with her cap on crooked and no apron. I've got the afternoon off, she said, and her nose twitched. I was just leaving when I saw you'd rung, Mrs. Fletcher, so I came, 'cause her that's on duty is answering another bell. Daisy smiled at her. I don't want to keep you from your time off. Could you have Edward bring up plenty of hot water?
Right away, madam.
Peering past Daisy, she added, Shall I fetch some extra towels and face flannels first?
Please do. Thank you, Sally, called Isabel. Hello, Miss Sutcliffe. Anything else you need?
Sally was obviously bursting with curiosity. She would hear the story sooner or later, doubtless in more detail than most people, because of her aunt charring at cherry trees. But she'd have to wait.
That's all just now. Thank you.
Daisy closed the door as the maid dashed off.
Phew, I think she smelt a rat.
I wish it had been a rat. Vera exclaimed.
They all stood for a moment looking at each other with remembered horror. Willie asked, Do you mind if I open the window, Daisy?
Please do. A bit of fresh air might help. Won't you all sit down? 2 chairs and 2 on the bed.
Better not, said Isabel. The smell might transfer from our clothes to the bedspread and upholstery.
Oh, dear. You're right.
That chair's caned, though. You'd better sit there, Daisy.
Willie lowered the window and perched on the windowsill.
Never mind playing hostess. You're still convalescent.
Am I right in thinking they won't let us go back to the house today, even if we want to? Which I, for one, don't.
Nor do I.
Vera leaned against the bedpost.
I just hope all our clothes aren't impregnated.
Alec said the upstairs doors were closed. I'm afraid the police may open them. Daisy frowned. I'm not sure whether they'd have to get a search warrant, in the circumstances.
Search our rooms?
Isabel was outraged. Why would they do that?
I'm not saying they will, just that they may, depending.
On what? Willie asked.
Well, I suppose on when the victim died, before or after you moved in.
In the silence that followed Daisy's statement, Sally tapped on the door and came in with towels and flannels.
The hot water will be a couple of minutes.
She piled her load on the cane-bottomed chair beside the folding screen that hid the marble washstand.
Will you be all right if I go now? I don't want to leave you ladies in the lurch.
Daisy assured her they'd manage without her and offered her a tip. She refused it.
I wouldn't have done it for anybody else, Mrs. Fletcher, and that's a fact. I'll be off now.
She whisked out.
You've got her eating out of your hand, Isabel commented, with a touch of envy. I wish her aunt were as tractable.
She's a nice girl, and ambitious. She's saving to take a typing course in London. I'll give her a good tip when Alec and I leave, to help her on her way. Speaking of which, hadn't you better book rooms for tonight? You don't want to go back to the house, even if the police would let you. Vera looked anxious.
The Saracen is too expensive for me.
We'll see if we can share a room with two beds and a truckle, Isabel suggested. Though if one of us goes down to the reception desk smelling like this, I wouldn't blame them for refusing us. Daisy has clean clothes she can change into, Willie reminded them. Daisy, would you mind?
Of course not. Here's our hot water.
She opened the door to admit the boots, struggling with several steaming water cans.
Thanks, Edward.
He disappeared behind the screen, and the metal cans clinked on the marble. Unlike Sally, he didn't appear to notice any untoward effluvium. Also, unlike the maid, he had no qualms about accepting a generous tip. He went off whistling.
If I'm to put on clean clothes, said Daisy, I think I'll have a bath. It didn't seem fair before, but as I'm to tackle the landlord...
Do, said Isabel. All the more hot water for us.
Half an hour later, much refreshed, Daisy went down to the foyer. The proprietor himself came in response to the bell. Mr. Whitford was short, round, rubicund, and smiling, like an idealized innkeeper straight out of Dickens. He continued to beam as he affirmed that he had a vacant room that would suit Daisy's friends down to the ground, with the addition of a remarkably comfortable folding cot that the boots would fetch down from the attic.
And the names of your friends, madam?
He asked, pencil poised over the register.
Miss Wilhelmina Chandler, Miss Isabel Sutcliffe, Miss Vera Layton.
He looked up. Eyebrows raised.
Miss Layton? That'd be the new teacher?
Yes, that's right.
Summit wrong at the house?
The truth, and nothing but the truth, but not by any means the whole truth.
There's a nasty smell.
Drains. That's an old house, that is. The last people were always having trouble with the drains. My cousin, he's a plumber. And he knows them drains inside out, backward and forward. Here, let me write down his name for the ladies. Not but what May Hedger will tell 'em he's the one they want.
Thank you. I'll give it to them. But they already have someone looking into the matter.
Never mind, eh? They'll end up wanting his help, I don't doubt. Now, here's the key to the room. Two of them's all I've got.
I'm sure they'll manage.
And I'll see the cot set up within the hour.
Thank you very much, Mr. Whitford. The landlord leaned across the counter and lowered his voice confidentially.
Truth is, I wouldn't do it for just anyone, but my daughter's boy, as wasn't any too keen on learning his letters. He likes going to school since Miss Layton's come.
He nodded and winked. Not at all sure what his manner was intended to convey, Daisy smiled in response and returned upstairs. Opening the bedroom door, she took a shallow breath as she stepped in, then sniffed. "It's not half as bad as it was," she announced.
"I can still smell it,"
Vera said unhappily.
"I wish I had a change of clothes."
"I could lend you and Willie frocks, though you'd flounder in them. You're both much slimmer than I am, and Willie's shorter."
"It wouldn't be fair. Izzy's too tall to borrow from you."
"I expect I can persuade Alec to go and pick up some clothes for you when he gets here."
"We haven't even got our handbags," Willie pointed out, "and I have to have my briefcase for work tomorrow."
"Alec will sort things out. In the meantime, here's a couple of keys to your own room. They're setting up a cot, which the landlord swears is remarkably comfortable." Isabel looked skeptical.
"Let's hope we won't have to suffer for too long."
"Daisy, how long will they keep us out?" "I really don't know, but I doubt if it will be longer than you'll want to stay away."
"I wonder whether Mrs. Hedger will be willing to clean the cellar. We may have to hire, I don't know what sort of person or company."
Isabel's domestic mind had already returned to the practicalities of their situation. Vera shuddered.
"You'll find someone, Iz," said Willie. "In the meantime, as we're now officially residents, I'm off to take a bath, even if I have to put the same clothes on again afterwards."
"Will there be time for all of us to have a bath before the police arrive?"
Vera asked.
"If not, they'll just have to wait. Come on, we'll see you in a bit, Daisy."
Daisy decided to put her feet up for a few minutes while she pondered the body in the basement. She was certain her three friends, the old and the new, were in no way responsible for the corpse in their cellar. Nonetheless, they were going to find themselves drawn into the police investigation. Always an ordeal. Daisy would have to stay in Beaconsfield and do what she could to give them the benefit of her experience. She rearranged the pillows, kicked off her shoes, leaned back, and promptly fell asleep. Harris was not happy. So much was evident as soon as the bulky sergeant stepped through the garden gate, wheeling his bicycle, his podgy face under the helmet, creased in a scowl. Alec wasn't very happy either. He had been pacing up and down the path for over 30 minutes. He didn't see how even an overweight police officer could take half an hour to bicycle 3/4 of a mile downhill. As Alec strode towards Harris, the sergeant turned his back and wheeled the bike over to a tree, against which he leaned it, his every motion slow and deliberate. Refusing to let himself be baited, if that was the man's game, Alec walked onto the gate. He looked each way along the street before he closed it, and turned back to find the sergeant staring at him suspiciously.
"Mr. Fletcher?"
"Yes. You're Harris, I take it.
What was you looking for just now?"
"Just to make sure no one followed you here. An elementary precaution."
Harris looked puzzled, as well he might. Some of the belligerents had left his voice when he asked,
"Now, what's all this about finding a corpse?"
"Follow me."
Alec spoke with authority. The man was already resentful, so any attempt to conciliate him was pointless. At least he didn't argue. Alec led him round to the open side door. Inside, the smell had mostly dissipated, though an unpleasant trace lingered. If Harris noticed it, he did not comment as the crunch of boots on gravel changed to a clatter on floor tiles. Alec gestured towards the cellar door.
"The body's in there. Would you like to see it first, or shall I explain the circumstances that led to my finding it?"
"Circumstances be blowed. I want to see whether there really is a body."
"All right."
Alec held his handkerchief to his nose as he reached for the door handle. Harris gave him a scornful look.
"I thought you met people were tough."
The door swung open. Before he had even cast a glance downwards, the sergeant gagged, his ruddy complexion taking on a ghastly grey-green tint. At top speed, he lumbered to the open side door and disappeared. Having slammed the cellar door shut, Alec went after him at a slightly more leisured pace. Sounds of retching came from the right, so he turned to the left and moved a few feet away to stand with his back to the unhappy sergeant.
"I would offer to fetch you a glass of water, Sergeant, but I don't intend to go back into the house for a while. Are you ready to hear how it came about that I..."
"Save it for Inspector Underwood,"
Harris snarled. He smirked as Alec swung round.
"He's expecting my call."
"I wondered whether you'd rung in. Underwood, is it? High Wycombe or Aylesbury?"
"High Wycombe. He'll be here in no time."
"Where are you going to telephone from?"
Harris took a step towards the house, shuddered, then hawked and spat.
"Not in there."
"They aren't connected yet, as it happens. What are you going to tell Underwood?"
"Why, that it's no false alarm. There really is a body."
"You haven't actually seen it, though."
"How do you know? Anyway, there's no need to tell the inspector. I smelled the reek, all right. That's enough for me."
"I'll stay and guard the house while you go and phone."
"No need for that. Just lock the place up before you go. Wait, where are you going? Don't leave Beaconsfield till the inspector's seen you."
"If I were to go, I'd join my wife and the ladies at the Saracen's Head. Unfortunately, they left in rather a hurry and didn't hand over any keys. I can't lock up. Besides which, the house needs airing."
"Well, don't go mucking about inside."
"If I had any desire to do so, I had half an hour on my own here before you turned up, Sergeant. I'll be here when you return."
"Have it your own way."
Sulky-faced, Harris trudged past Alec and round the corner of the house. Alec wished he could overhear Harris's report. He wondered whether Underwood would press the man about the appearance of the body. Admittedly, he doubted that he himself would be able to give a good description. The stench had been so overpowering, it befogged his memory, obscuring the scene in spite of his deliberate attempt to fix it in his mind. No blowflies. That was a mercy. But it was odd. The cellar was not absolutely airtight, and carrion flies were exceptionally good at seeking out the smell of death. Although they couldn't find a way in, he'd have expected them to cluster at the keyhole. He tried to recall the moments before he had swung the keyhole cover aside and inserted his pick. Had he been aware of a faint odor, or was it his imagination in hindsight? No. There had been something, but his olfactory memory insisted it had been the smell of disinfectant, not decay. One of Daisy's friends, most likely Isabel Sutcliffe, must be keen on hygiene, or doing her utmost to disguise the noxious emanations from the cellar. Alec wanted to know a good deal more about the background of Miss Sutcliffe, of her companions as well, since Isabel might have tried to get rid of the smell without knowing its source. However, it was none of his business, he reminded himself. All he had to do was hang about until the obnoxious sergeant returned, and later give a statement to the inspector from High Wycombe. His pondering had come full circle. What exactly had he seen on the floor below the broken rail? A woman, lying on her back, her arms flung out, her head at that angle that speaks unmistakably of death, the obscene remains of scarlet lipstick on the devastated mouth. The condition of the body was such that he couldn't begin to guess her age. Though her dark brown hair had shown no grey, these days that meant little. Bobbed hair, or she had put it up in a knot behind her head. Brown tweed costume, flesh-coloured stockings, one well-polished brown leather shoe, not flat but low-heeled, as if the wearer expected to do a certain amount of walking. He hadn't noticed a second shoe. Pearls, real or imitation, closer examination would tell. Gloves? He thought not. He had a vague impression that a hat, the usual cloche style, had lain on the floor some distance from her head. She had fallen backwards, or twisted as she fell. As for the space she lay in, it was about the same size as the kitchen above it. Three walls of mortared brick were lined with empty wooden wine racks. The floor appeared to be the native chalk, levelled and compacted. He hadn't looked at the ceiling. That was all Alec remembered. He was tempted to go and take another look, but repulsion overcame temptation without much of a struggle. It was not his affair. Except as a witness, he was reminded, as an elderly constable joined him, saying,
"I'm the beat officer, sir. Sergeant Harris told me to keep an eye on you."
6. The click of the door latch woke Daisy. She blinked at Alec.
"Have a good nap."
"Darling, I wasn't asleep."
"Of course not, if you say so. Let me amend that. Are you feeling better for the rest?"
"Much. I didn't dream, or rather, have a nightmare." He laughed at her, then said seriously,
"I'm afraid not."
"I take it the local Bobby turned up. What did he have to say?"
"He was in a great hurry to turn things over to his superiors. I didn't wait for their arrival. Where are your friends?"
"They've taken a room here and went to do a more thorough job of washing than they could as non-residents. Darling, they desperately need clean clothes. I don't suppose you could fetch something for them?"
"Not, at least, until Inspector Underwood gives the say-so. In any case, they won't want me rooting through their drawers."
"I wouldn't be so sure, especially if the alternative is letting the locals pour through their undies. Or going into the house before it's been fumigated. Goodness, is that the time? They're probably downstairs by now. Will you go and knock on their door while I splash my face and powder my nose?" Daisy had to go to the bathroom to wash the sleep from her eyes, as every last driblet of water in the cans had been used. When she returned to their room, Alec was back, having found the other's room empty, gone downstairs and found out they were in the parlour.
Whither I dared not venture.
There's a residence lounge, too. I'll get them to move so that we can have a confab. He groaned.
Do I want a confab?
Of course. I'm sure you've got dozens of questions you want to ask.
That's as may be. Allow me to remind you, it's not my case.
Yet, said Daisy. Unless you altogether avoid Willy and company, you won't be able to avoid discussing it.
We'd better go back to town as soon as I've given my statement to Inspector Underwood. I'm due back to work tomorrow, remember?
Oh, blast. Daisy coughed experimentally. I think I'd better stay on for a few days to make sure I'm completely recovered.
The air in Hampstead is perfectly good now.
Perhaps I should go up with you and see what my doctor advises.
Don't bother. He's completely under your thumb. If you asked him to advise you to go to the Riviera, he'd comply without hesitation.
Daisy laughed. Luckily, I don't want to go to the Riviera. I might go up with you tomorrow just to see the babies. But I do want to be here to support Willy. You must admit, I have plenty of experience of surviving police interrogation.
Which is nothing to boast of. All you can do is advise them to tell the truth.
The whole truth and nothing but the truth. I wonder how many times I've heard that. She kept her reservations on the subject to herself. Come on, let's go down. It's tea time, and I'm ravenous.
I wonder how many times I've heard that.
Downstairs, they went to the residence lounge. Alec flipped on the electric lights as daylight was fast fading. Overstuffed horsehair chairs and a small sofa, covered in once maroon rep, formed four or five groups round low beechwood tables. On each were several coasters advertising drinks. A mauve hearth rug with a pattern of orange triangles clashed horribly. Elsewhere, the polished floorboards showed the scratches and scuffs of centuries that no amount of polishing could hide. Inevitably, fox-hunting prints adorned the walls. Daisy continued through the connecting door to the ladies' parlour. Here, flowered cretonne reigned. The prints were of old roses, and the floor boasted an inadequate square of emerald green carpet. Her friends were the only occupants. Daisy, where have you been? Willy greeted her, jumping up. Sorry, I fell asleep. Alec's back. He can't come in here. Let's have tea in the residence lounge.
I didn't think I'd ever be able to face food again, said Vera. But I admit I'm hungry, and a cup of tea would be bliss.
We must keep our strength up, Isabel said bracingly. When the police turn up to pepper us with a lot of questions, we'll be glad of it. Pity we didn't eat the roast beef first and look for a bottle of liqueur afterwards.
Daisy was turning back towards the other room when Willy stopped her with a hand on her arm.
We wondered if it's all right to talk to Alec about what happened. To ask him what he saw, I mean, how long the body has been there, that sort of thing.
Without any gory details,
Vera clarified.
After all, no one's told us not to talk about it.
The local Bobby may have asked Alec to keep quiet. He'll make up his own mind, though. Ask away. He can but refuse to answer. She went through, relieved to find Alec still alone. He stood leaning against the mantelpiece. Tea, darling. Everyone's famished.
I've already rung the bell.
As they settled by the fire,
A middle-aged waitress came in. Alec ordered tea for five, with plenty of sandwiches. The waitress left. Alec went over to the door and made sure it was closed properly.
"Is anyone in there?"
he asked, pointing to the ladies' parlour. They all shook their heads as he came back to sit down.
"We can talk now. But if someone comes in, including servants, we change the subject."
"All right," said Willie. "First, what did you actually see in the cellar? None of us stopped to look. A man or a woman?"
"A woman. Dark hair. That's about all I can tell you."
"Can or will?" Alec smiled.
"A bit of each."
"Did the local police tell you not to blow the gaff?" Daisy asked.
"Not in so many words, but the only officer I saw was a local sergeant, Harris. He was out of his depth. I didn't wait for the detectives to turn up. I'm treading on thin ice here."
"And you don't want to fall in up to your neck? But at least you're not quite mixing your metaphors."
"Great Scott, Daisy. I'm trying to explain my position here to your friends."
"I've already told them, darling." She gave him a sweet smile in exchange for his exasperated look. "What was Sergeant Harris like?"
"Well, let's just say I interrupted him in the middle of his Sunday roast, and things went downhill from there."
"Oh dear, Sergeant Harris," said Isabel. "That's the man who came round a couple of days after we moved in, to introduce himself. He made it very clear he didn't approve of three unrelated single women living together. I doubt if he has a right side to get on."
"If he does, I certainly didn't get on it."
"He knows who you are?"
"I told him I'm an officer of the Metropolitan Police. I didn't mention the yard, or being a detective, nor my rank. I'll have to tell the inspector, though."
"When are you going to notify the super?" Daisy sighed. "I suppose you have to."
"Can you imagine the explosion if I didn't, and he found out? Which he'd be bound to. I won't disturb him on a Sunday evening, but I'll send a wire from here before I go into work tomorrow, to give him time to simmer down a bit, with any luck, before I see him."
"They'll let us go to work, won't they?"
Vera asked anxiously.
"I can't think of any reason why they wouldn't. They might turn up with more questions."
Vera bit her lip.
"I'll get the sack, for sure."
"No,
why should you?"
Willie cried. "You haven't done anything wrong."
"The townspeople won't want their children taught by someone who's been mixed up in a murder investigation. I can't blame them."
"Mr. Cartwright will stick up for you. The headmaster's words must carry a lot of weight." Looking even unhappier, Vera said,
"Yes, but no, I don't know."
"For pity's sake, which?" "Leave her alone, Willie," Isabel snapped. "She says she doesn't know. What about your job?"
"I'm not worried about losing it.
Alec, I suppose it really is a case of murder."
"She didn't lock the door herself."
"No, and there's no hope of keeping it quiet." Willie answered her own question. "No, of course not. Even if the press somehow missed it, we couldn't keep it from Mrs. Hedger, and she'd have it all over town in no time." "To do her justice," said Isabel, "she has her faults, but she's not a gossip." "Until now, we haven't given her anything juicy to gossip about," Willie pointed out. On this dispiriting note, their tea arrived. For some time, no one spoke of the dire discovery at Cherry Trees. When the waitress came to remove the scant debris, Daisy noticed that everyone looked more cheerful. She felt more cheerful herself. She knew, though, that Alec, despite his announced detachment from the investigation, wouldn't be able to resist returning to the subject that was on all their minds. Isabel got in first. "I've been trying and trying to think what we can do about saving your job, Vera. No brilliant ideas so far, I'm afraid." "We'll come up with something," Willie said confidently. "If the issue ever materializes. As long as the children like you and behave for you, I doubt the board, the parents, or the head will want to lose you. Mr. Fletcher, how long is it likely to be before the police let us back into the house? I've got important papers that I need at work tomorrow."
"I really can't say. There are too many variables. You won't want to move back in until it's been thoroughly cleansed and disinfected, of course. Would your Mrs. Hedger tackle a nasty job like that?"
"I don't know," said Isabel. "She might, if we're paid enough. If not, I just hope I'll be able to find some odd job man, glad to get any work. In the meantime, what am I supposed to do about things like the milk delivery? The post?"
"Sorry, I've never had to deal with that side of things. The inspector might be persuaded to bring out the papers you need, Miss Chandler, after they've been examined."
"The papers are highly confidential."
"Then you'd have to insist that only he see them. Men rarely reach the rank of detective inspector if they're incapable of keeping information confidential."
"All very well, but my boss, I'll have to get his permission. Mr. Davis, of Spencer, Mort and Davis."
"Have it out with D.I. Underwood."
"I need the children's work papers that I took home to correct," said Vera. "Those are not confidential, of course."
"Will they really rummage through all our stuff?" Isabel asked in dismay.
"Sorry, I would, in the circumstances. I can't speak for the local chap. Now you've had time to think, can you still not recall any visitors since you moved in?"
Isabel frowned. "Not what I'd describe as a visitor. The house agent dropped in one morning. He wanted to check that everything was all right."
"Did you ask whether he had a key to the cellar?"
"Yes, as a matter of fact. He said Mrs. Gray never let him have any keys. She insisted she should always be present when he showed the house."
"What about the solicitors?"
Willie answered. "When we signed the papers, her solicitor handed over a set of keys. All he had. Of course, we weren't to use them before the first. Come to think of it, he should have got Mrs. Gray's set from her when she left and turned them over. Which he didn't."
"Good point."
"She may have gone off with them by accident."
"Yes, or he may have forgotten to give them to you. Underwood must ask him. What's his name?"
"Darling, it's not your case," Daisy reminded him. "No solicitors."
"Right, love. Miss Sutcliffe, are you certain that Vaughan didn't have any keys?"
"I only know what he told me." "If Vaughan had had them," said Willie, "I wouldn't count on him to give them up. Assuming his claim is true, I don't blame Mrs. Gray for not trusting him."
"Why?"
But Willie would say no more. Alec turned back to Isabel.
"Vaughan didn't offer to write to her to ask about the cellar key, or keys in general. I assume you haven't got her present address."
"No, and nor did he. He asked me if I had it. In fact, I thought at the time that was the only reason he came. He was disappointed when I said I didn't, and he left pretty quickly after."
Presumably her solicitor has an address for her.
Alec, Daisy said warningly. He gave her a rueful grin.